This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hundreds of years, anthropologists have studied the social relationships of human beings. And none have been more confounding than what they call the different strokes effect.
Get it?
Meet Jade Gulliver. A charmingly low-maintenance, amicable sci-fi fan and avid podcaster. And David Lim, a top model-strutting, goldfish-loving, walking jukebox. So, can you handle the difference? Get ready for Different Strokes.
Cause it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. It takes different strokes to move the world.
Oh, Jade.
Yes.
You know what? Every time you come up with a segment like a flashback segment, I always expect to be completely lost about it.
Yes.
And you've done it again.
Yes.
You've picked something out of history that I've just gone, okay, what the hell is this? Was I around in this period of time? And et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't, you know, you always say that, oh, I make you feel like a dinosaur and all that kind of good stuff. But I don't mean to. It's just that I've never heard of Rainbow Bright.
Yeah, well, look, I'm going to...
Should I have?
I think, like, see, the problem is, Dave, right, the way that... The reason that you always make me feel like a dinosaur is that you claim to not even know things from the 90s. Like,
I'm just a really blissfully ignorant person when it comes to these things.
And I'm at least going to give you that the Rainbow Bright in its first version was on before you were even born.
Okay.
And finished before you were even born.
Okay, so you're not mad at me for not knowing
I'm not mad at you in theory, but I guess, like, the thing is, right, I know about shows that, or things that existed before I was born. You know, like, one of my favourite shows to watch when I was really, really little was Mork and Mindy, and that finished in the 70s. I wasn't born yet.
Mork and Mindy. I've heard you mention that before.
So, you know, there is... These things get repeated.
Do they?
Yeah. It's like Saturday cartoons and stuff, you know. They're just everywhere.
Well, okay, just to give you an idea, when I was younger and... Literally from the ages 3 to, I'm embarrassed to say, about 9, I was watching Mickey Mouse cartoons.
Yeah.
I used to have them on a VHS. My dad used to tape them. And I watched them for most of my childhood. The same Mickey Mouse cartoons that were probably, you know, filmed and put out in the 40s or the 50s.
I think Mickey Mouse is very old school, Dave. And so maybe that's the thing. Like, you've got I'm very, very old school.
Like, I'm real dinosaur in taste. Like, you're not even dinosaur, you're at caveman.
Least, yeah, at least I'm like child of my time, or like, you know.
Oh, I'm truly dinosaur now. That's what you're saying.
Different Strokes Flashback. Bringing pop culture back from the yesteryears.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, I love reliving my childhood.
Oh, I can tell. With every flashback episode, you bring back an old TV show or an old book or something like that.
It's really just an excuse for me to, like, you know, I love just going onto YouTube and, like, randomly.
Isn't YouTube an amazing invention?
Yes.
Like, you know, I love the fact that people have somehow been able to rip something from a VHS tape and put it on YouTube. I'd love to know how to do that. You know, I would love to be able to do something like that, but...
And what it means is that we can actually get back those things, you know what I mean? Like, you can actually relive them again. I don't know that their Rainbow Bright is out on box set or anything. I would be interested to know if they do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. But in any case, you can catch all the episodes on YouTube. And we've put the first episode, the first ever Rainbow Bright episode on our blog. And
the pilot, if you will.
Oh, the pilot. Oh, there you go. Make it sound all qualified.
It's the Genesis story of Rainbow Bright.
I watched the first 30 seconds because I was the one who embedded it. And I was just like... Wow, this is really retro. This is just how cartoons were done in the 80s.
I watched the whole thing.
What, the whole first episode?
Yeah.
Did you just forget about work today and just start?
As soon as I came, I rushed in as soon as I came from work today and I was like, okay, I would better watch. I saw that you were in bed and I was like, okay, well, I've definitely got to watch this first episode. And it actually explained the entire, I guess, the genesis, if you will, of Rainbow Bright. So I guess the concept of Rainbow Bright is a cartoon series that was on during the 80s. And Dave, let me tell you, like, I bang on about Scully all the time. Like,
you do. You have this crazy X-Files obsession.
I do. But Rainbow Bright and Punky Brewster were, like, my Scully before Scully existed. Like, you know, they're both these kind of kick-ass, like, colourful girls who are, like, you know, trying to navigate their way through the world. And, you know, both of them are, like, kind of orphans and they've had, like, rough lives and they're kind of, you know, trying to make it. I really think that this is where girl power started, right?
Girl power, not from Jerry Halliwell and the Union Jack dress.
And you know what? Like, Jerry Halliwell and all of that, they're kind of a bit older than me, like, you know, mm-hmm. a couple of years, you know, 5 to 10 years older than me. But I think maybe they were watching Rainbow Bright.
Or and they were inspired.
And they were inspired.
Well, the Rainbow Bright thing and, you know, the pop music aftermath, I can see the connection there. You
it
know,
totally feels
something
like a
very gay. Something very gay happening.
It totally is. As I was watching today, I was like, this is very gay.
I mean, it's called Rainbow Bright and they're colour people.
But yeah, so there's so basically what happens is there's a little orphan girl and her name is Wisp in the first episode and she is taken to this colourless world effectively and she has to find the sphere of light.
Oh my God, this is someone's coming out story.
Yeah.
I can tell.
And while she's there, she meets like her little sidekick Sprite, who's like a little Sprite and his name is Twink.
Oh, do you need any more references, really?
It really could be my story, you know. Of course, you're playing the role of Twink.
I'm Twink.
Yeah. and she's also got this majestic, like, white horse who calls himself, like, the best horse in the universe, right?
Oh, my God.
And his name is Starlight, and he talks. And then she sort of rescues the 7 colour kids and she gets this colour belt. And she has to, like... And
what every fag hag should have.
And she brings colour to the land. Like, that's what her job is. And so after the first episode, she defeats the King of Shadows, just to give it away, and he names her Rainbow Bright. And from then on, basically her job is to live in Rainbow Land and, you know, be in charge of all of the colours.
So, hang on. This quest to bring colour back to land, does that stretch for the whole series or is it done in the first few episodes?
Well, from what I can tell, it's done through the first episode.
Oh.
And then they're in Rainbow Land and they just come to the rescue of whoever they need to at the time. Like,
oh, so the adventures take place in a land full of colour.
Yes. Hmm. And then they've got... and these colours, right, have powers. So I'm not sure how the powers work exactly, but each colour kid is responsible for their respective colour, right? And then they're mining colour crystals from the colour caves and they turn into star sprinkles and then...
Yay!
And that all fuels the colour belt.
If this isn't Joy 94.9, I don't know what kind of station could handle this much sparkle and, you know, colour and rainbowness.
And you know what I found hilarious when I was watching the episodes today, Dave? Like, it's all of the cartoons that I remember watching from when I was a kid, they all use the same sound effects. Like, you know, so running. Yeah, all of that. Like, the running always sounds the same. Moaning. You're, like, hitting yourself in the head always sounds the same. Jumping. It's like they had, like, you know, maybe they had this list of like 10 sound effects
just
during the
80s
that they could just play. And so every cartoon, like, you know, I watched heaps of cartoons when I was a kid, like, you know, Smurfs or like Care Bears or Transformers, any of them, all
I feel
use the same.
At any point, sometime down the line, you're going to bring the Care Bears to a Different Strokes flashback.
I totally should.
I didn't even realize you were a Care Bears person.
Oh, well, I was little at the time. I mean,
okay.
The first time it's real. I mean, Care Bears are still big today.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
But every so often they have these like
comebacks.
Yeah. And I did actually find out that Rainbow Bright had a comeback in 2009.
Apparently, oh, we missed it.
Yeah, there was all of these. So, of course, when Rainbow Bright was big the first time around, you could get like a Rainbow Bright doll. And she had like a little twink with her. I actually had one. And then you could
every
also...
Every girl should have a twink with her.
Yes. And I also had all of the colour kids as well. So, aww. Yeah. But so apparently there was a 2009 version, but I did not see that.
You know, Jade, if I can find a Rainbow Bright t-shirt, mm-hmm. like circa 2009 with all the like vintage goodness, mm-hmm. I'll get that for your birthday.
Aww.
Either that or, you know, I might have to just make it myself.
Yeah, you totally could
and
make
superimpose
it
my face on Twink.
Yeah, that would be really good. I could be Rainbow Bright.
You can be Rainbow Bright. And because you used to have hair like Rainbow Bright.
I totally did. That was the 80s style.
Culture. The attitudes and behaviour characteristic of a particular social group.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, I love that you're going to do politics.
I find it strange because anyone who knows me knows that I'm not a political person in the sense that someone who openly talks about politics and, you know, likes to engage in that kind of discussion and debate, I tend to keep my opinions to myself. And I, you know, being radio presenters, we are privileged in the sense that we can voice our opinions and we can share our thoughts with the community and everyone. But politics was one of those things that I never wanted to go into because I always felt like perhaps I should know what I'm talking about a bit more first before I open my mouth because mm-hmm. I don't want to be like one of those people that are ignorant.
Yes.
But on tonight's show, you know why, Jade? Because we are a media show.
We are a media show. And it's true. As a rule, we generally don't talk about politics, either you or I, on air. It's quite a but we've given it our spin.
We've given it our spin because we are a media show, Different Strokes. And what we have observed is with election coming up next Saturday, all these social media sites that you and I frequent, you and I live on, like Twitter
and Facebook.
And Facebook and Tumblr and all these blogs and all these things, we're getting hit with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to ignore the fact that people are interested in, you know, which party to vote for, the policies and, you know, the scandals and what so-and-so has said in the media and all that, you can't help but get swept up in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, we have politicians on Twitter and all that. And it's very interesting because the people that we follow on Twitter, you know, obviously our friends on Facebook, most of them are young people.
Yes.
And they're the ones who are generating these content. They're the ones who are blogging about it, tweeting about it, sharing YouTube clips about it. So I thought it was really interesting, Jade, to see how young Australians are expressing and formulating their political opinion through the media and using, you know, things like apps and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you noticed that trend as well? Like on Twitter, there's this hashtag where it's OzVotes.
Yes.
Have you noticed the prevalence of that?
I have noticed that. And I've also, I mean, obviously I've noticed that there's more sort of political discussion going on at the moment. You know, I would say this election, I'm probably a lot less involved or informed about what's actually happening than I have been in previous elections.
Less informed?
Yeah, in terms of like I am not actually following it myself.
Okay.
The only things that I know about it is from actually reading on Twitter or like I, you know, and if someone posts a link, in most cases I don't read it. I will just read what they've actually said in the tweet or whatever. So I'm kind of, I'm very disenchanted.
It's
this
very
time around,
interesting
Dave.
That you said that because 3 years ago when we had our last election, I thought I knew what was going on. I thought I was, you know, quite involved with what was happening. I was quite on the ball and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But with this one, I feel like I can't help but no more. I already feel now that I'm a lot more knowledgeable with, you know, what party's doing what and what politicians standing up for what and all that.
Yeah.
Because I'm on Twitter a lot and there's a lot of people that I follow on Twitter that are constantly harping on about these things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't follow politicians myself because I always find it funny that politicians have their own Twitter account because you always go, who's tweeting behind the scenes? And
it's, you know, it's like pop stars. They're not really doing it.
Well, you know it's a pop star doing it when there's heaps of typos and, you know, like drunk texting and all that.
I think there are some pop stars who are doing their own and I think there are others who have,
their
say,
people.
Team Kylie or something like that.
Oh, no, you didn't. I'm going to take my gloves off. We might just do a segue now, just so I can address this issue that's more important than politics. Okay, you bring Kylie into this. We have to settle this now. It is the real Kylie Minogue that's tweeting. I'm almost certain.
Almost certain. I've seen a picture of her actually tweeting.
Be quiet. Stop trying to distract me.
I'm sure it's one of her people, and I'm sure that person is with her, like, you know, all the time.
I'm pretty sure it's Kylie. Look, she's not like Julia Gillard. I'm not sure whether Julia Gillard's actually on Twitter, because the stuff that I've seen people tweet directly to her, if I was Julia Gillard, I'll be just gone, damn.
Haven't we actually had someone tell us that they knew the person that was helping to run Julia Gillard's, Gillard's Twitter? I'm pretty sure.
Maybe you just know people in high places, tweeting places.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're the real accounts, they're the real politicians on Twitter, and then they're the fake ones.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to ever follow any politician, I think I'd rather go with the fake ones.
Yes.
I mean, I follow the fake Queen of England on Twitter, and that's way funnier than anything the real Queen could come up with. You know what I mean? But the point is that it's all in our faces. Young people on Twitter all the time, you know, really voicing their opinions. And I find that I'm getting bits of my opinion through that as well. Do you feel like you're being informed by your peers on Twitter and Facebook and blogs and all that?
I don't think it's not helping me make a decision at all.
Is it confusing you?
Not, right now I don't feel, probably this time around I feel like more apathetic than I've ever felt in terms of.
Maybe that's just a reflection on just the parties and the policies.
The parties and the policies to me this time around seem very similar. I don't see any real difference. But what I find really interesting, though, is that there's a the politicians have to feel like they have to go on Twitter to begin with, for example. Like they have to go on Facebook, or they have to do these things. And then how that kind of also affects, I guess, their image. Like, because, you know, politicians have this very kind of polished image and everything is like, you know, really it's all soundbite and it's all kind of, you know, policy statement, policy statement, policy statement.
Jargon, jargon, jargon.
Yeah. Yep. And there's, but it's like as soon as you open it up to this kind of new source, it almost leaves them open to, I guess, ridiculed a lot more. And then also if you get on there and do policy statement, policy statement, policy statement, it isn't really effective.
No.
It's like, because I guess the thing that works about Twitter and the thing that I like about people who are, you know, and we'll use the pop star example, pop stars or whoever who are actually tweeting as themselves, is that it's like you get your own, you get more of an insight into who that person is. So when you come on there with your polished statement, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, I feel that's a bit contrived. Yeah. You get people that really do tweet their mind, like Family First. I don't even know who this woman is, please. Her name's Wendy Francis. She's aligned with Family First, and she tweeted some absolutely foul stuff about legitimizing gay marriage and saying stuff like legitimizing gay marriage is like legalizing child abuse.
But even that came through her team Twitter. It didn't actually.
Don't think it was actually her?
She's actually.
Because I was just saying that, you know, she is on the gay mafia hit list. Like, Sister Girl would never get good hair or nails or proper shoes fitted. She would never get any of the gay, you know, related services. Ever. She'll be on a plane and air stewardesses will just spill drinks on her.
Well, I was, you know, I was assuming that it was her doing it, but I, from what I've read of the situation, she actually has a team or an office that assists in doing
in
those
tweets. Activities.
Yes.
What about shows like Q&A that use Twitter feeds and, you know?
I think it will become more common. Now, see, I've never watched Q&A, and I always say there's really no need for me to watch Q&A.
It's like MasterChef. You don't have to watch it because there's, you know, five people that we follow that tells you the whole story.
Absolutely everything. And by the time – so on a Tuesday night, basically my entire Twitter feed is full of tweets about what's happening on Q&A, you know, and the consensus this week seemed to be that Julia Gillard did a good job. And, you know, there's like...
You get a whiff of what's going on.
Yeah, and, you know, and then a couple of weeks ago they were talking about Penny Wong and it's just, you know, you don't need to find it. You don't need to watch it anymore.
I find it is interesting because going back to the point where politics is kind of keeping me informed. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, back when I was in high school, my main source of political information and, if you will, bias mm-hmm. would have come from my father. Mm-hmm. My mum's just oblivious to what's happening. I don't even think she knows what to do with the voting card. I think I have to show her at some point. But my dad, he gets into it. But I find that this time around, because I'm also not living with my dad anymore, I feel like I'm getting that knowledge and that information from social media, mm-hmm. from my friends' blogs and from things that I... Did you know there is an app out there called Australia Votes 2010? It actually tells you what's going on.
Oh, really?
There is an app out there that you can get so you can stay informed with what's going on.
I know plenty of people who are probably sitting there downloading that app right now.
Yeah, like it's... clever in a sense, but I would like to know whether it's actually helping people make up their minds, or is it confusing people, or is it just what I find interesting? Because with things like Q&A, you see a lot of people tweeting about it, you see a lot of people talking about it, but is that the Australian public? Is that reflective of young Australians? Do most young Australians care?
Or is it just us?
Oh, is it just us and the circle we keep?
Yes.
You say that it's about pop artist with character. Forget what you've heard. I do listen to Strummy Lala music, as I like to call it.
Get ready for a Different Strokes take on music.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. We had another text in.
Oh, hello.
James, who is our number one fan, James.
Even if it's another James, we're just going to say this one is our number one fan.
I'm going to say it's him because he did tweet me during the day to say something very similar. He said, great show so far, Jade. Don't worry, I know Rainbow Bright and I was born in 1990. Another fave was Captain Planet. Oh, I totally have to talk about Captain Planet one week. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on Arcade Fire.
Well, ask and you shall receive.
Yes.
It's like rubbing the genie lamp.
It totally is.
Out comes a review.
I'm much more like susceptible to like what's been suggested by our audience than you I think.
Well, Dave. Maybe just because I'm a Nazi and I just go, well.
You've got a very clear vision, whereas I tend to make my mind up like as a split second, you know, as we go. And therefore,
if you want to run this show, go through Jade. She's an easier one to wear down.
Yeah, exactly. I'm more willing to go with whatever anyone suggests.
So was Arcade Fire a suggestion?
No, it wasn't actually a suggestion. I was actually going to do Washington's album, but I had some issues with my MP3 provider where it wouldn't download the album for me. And I was like, okay, well, if you care about it that much, see you later. Like, well, I tried several occasions. It didn't work. So then I was viciously going through all of the new releases and trying to find what I was going to do.
Because there was a heap of new releases last week for the indie community.
And so,
and I say that with such disdain, don't I?
Yeah, you totally do. And so I went with Arcade Fire. Anyways, so this is actually their third album. Their last album, Neon Bible, which I'm not sure if you know anything about, Dave, it was incredibly popular in indie circles.
Mm-hmm.
Fans of Arcade Fire can expect a little bit of a change from what they actually heard in the last album. So the album's called Suburbs. It's basically, I guess it feels a lot like sort of, it's almost like this a storytelling or love story almost about living or growing up in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's vocally, it's very similar to what, you know, still that Arcade Fire feel, but it's very, it's a lot more upbeat and bouncy in vibe than Neon Bible was. At times on this album, they actually started to remind me a lot more of one of my favorite husband and wife bands. And it's funny because, you know, the two sort of main singers in this band are actually husband and wife also, Mates of State.
Oh, Mates of State, husband and wife?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
So it kind of has... At times, they've kind of got those harmonies happening. It's got a lot of big orchestral sounds, which you would expect in a band that has, like, I don't know, seven members. It's got, you know, they've got quite a lot of members in their band.
So Arcade Fire has seven members.
Mm.
How do they all fit on stage?
Well, apparently it goes out to 10 when they do live shows.
Wow.
Yeah.
Spilling from the sides.
And it's... I was reading an article about them today and they, you know, and they were talking about how they quite like to do these sort of surprise secret shows.
It's not very secret when there's 10 people filing in, is it?
It seems, yeah, and it, you know, and that was what the interviewer was asking, like, how do you actually navigate that when you've got 10 people that
and
you're...
probably a truckload of equipment.
Yeah, exactly. But some of the tracks that I thought were worth a listen are City With No Children, Modern Man, Half-Light 1, there is Half-Light 1 and Half-Light 2, and then Suburban War, Deep Blue, and I also am a big fan of The Suburbs, which is actually the lead single from the album. Mm-hmm. It's a very sort of piano-driven track that could be written by any of, you know, those piano singer-songwriters that I always talk about.
Is that a criticism, though, or is that just...
No, it's good.
It's good, it's good.
It's much, as an album, much less hard work than their last album. Mm. And dare I say it...
Oh, dare I say it, pinky up.
Less highbrow indie.
Oh. Okay, when you say highbrow indie, do you mean that it's more accessible?
Yes.
Okay, so if something is highbrow indie, it means that you really have to essentially hate it and endure it.
Yeah.
To,
and it's like...
I don't like that. Yeah. I think music should be enjoyable. And there are some music that should be an expressional form and it's not meant to be radio ready.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. But if it's just noise...
Yeah, I'm with you too. I'm like, I mean,
it shouldn't be hard work.
It's not that I didn't like their last album or anything. I just feel like, you know, there's kind of this culture around indie music at times that gets a bit irritating, if you will,
and pretentious.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it doesn't music doesn't have to be inaccessible or like hard to like digest to make it good. Another thing, Dave, that I found really interesting, 16 tracks on this album.
Damn.
And we've, you know, we've had many discussions before about how you think 8 tracks is an album.
I think 8 tracks is sufficient in this day and age.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Brandy's album, can't believe I'm bringing her up. It's 2010. Hello, Moesha's dead. Brandy's album, like, you know, it usually goes for about 18 tracks.
Yeah.
But Janet Jackson has 22 tracks and half of them are probably interludes.
Well, see, this is what was interesting about this. When I saw that it was 16, I was expecting there to be quite a few interludes. Like Foal's album that we reviewed a couple of, about 2 months ago, I think now, they had quite a lot of interludes in the actual album. But this is like 16 fully formed. Fully formed songs. There are, you know, there's are ones and twos of certain tracks.
Like sequels.
Yes, but it kind of, they're effectively songs on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite, you know, you're getting a lot for your money.
It's a good value. And
yes.
I heard that there are 8 different collectible CD cover arts.
There are, which is
interesting in this
and
day and
interesting
age. The last person did it was Michael Jackson circa Invincible.
Oh, really?
When he had like different colored versions of his album cover. Mm. Like you could get a red copy or a green one or a white one or whatever.
And apparently these are being randomly distributed too. So you will actually have to go searching if you want to collect all 8.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
See, that's a bit of fan
it's
work.
It's like Willy Wonka.
Isn't it?
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.